Welcome to AdLib, the York Theatre Royal podcast,
where we interview industry professionals and get an insight into the theatre world.
I'm Henry.
And I'm Jessie.
And this week we are delighted to be joined by the incredible award-winning director, writer and performer Emma Rice of the company Wise Children.
It's a really good episode, so we hope you enjoy.
And now we're joined by Emma Rice on across the internet on Zoom. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. It's lovely to see you both.
So how are you? Yeah, how are you?
I'm all right. I feel very lucky because we're all healthy primarily. But we've recently moved to Somerset, moved out of Bristol a year ago. So I'm in the countryside. So we're being bullied by swallows at the moment. But if that's the worst of my troubles, then I'm happy.
No, that's lovely. You can make the most of your one walk a day.
Exactly.
So for anyone who doesn't know who you are, could you give a brief background to you and your work?
Yeah. So I'm Emma Rice and I'm the artistic director of Wise Children, which is a new company I set up 2 years ago. And I set it up after I'd been the artistic director at Shakespeare's Globe for 2 years, which was slightly ill-fated. And before that, I was the artistic director of Knee High in Cornwall. So I'm very loyal. I've worked for only three companies, but this is my own company, Wise Children. And the reason I hope I'm on your podcast is York has a really special place in my heart. You're the only theatre that has co-produced all three of my first shows. We love coming to you. We love the theatre. And Tom Bird, your exec producer, he was at the Globe with me and then came to York and I went to Wise Children. So I feel a great kinship with you and also a huge gratitude because you've really helped launch my beloved company, Wise Children. So thank you.
We feel like really excited and lucky to be in that little in group with Wise Children. That's really cool. We were just talking about how, yeah, we are the theatre that's done all three of them, which is very cool. And it's also where Wise Children was filmed.
Yeah, we filmed, wasn't it? And that was in March 2018. So it's captured on film as well, the sort of the coming together of these, of the company and the theatre. And it was so beautiful and so thrilling. Yeah, and like you say, it's an amazing relationship that we've already built. And you've helped us practically. We've done amazing things in your building, but you've been loyal as well. And it's something I talk about a lot, which is loyalty really gets you through a lot of trouble in the arts, gets you through a lot of trouble in life, and it really gets you through a lot of trouble in the arts. And we're sitting in quite a lot of trouble now. So, you know, who knows how we're going to come out of it and when, but it's going to be friends and loyalty and creativity that's going to get us out of it. And York Theatre Royal are right at the top of our list.
Oh, brill.
Well, I sat and watched Wise Children the other night just to sort of refresh my memory because it's on iPlayer, obviously. And I felt very nostalgic because it was like being sat in the auditorium again. And obviously we haven't done that for a while. So that was very nice.
I know. These places have been our homes for so long, haven't they? And you've taken them for granted. I'm sure you do it. All of us that run businesses or are part of businesses, you do these things called risk registers, which I used to hate and then I love, which is you imagine the worst thing that could happen and then how you would manage that risk. And I tell you what, this was not on, as this has never been on a risk register for me. So it's come out of the left field, hasn't it? And I never thought we would not be able to go into our buildings and what that would mean and not be able to sit next to other human beings. So we've got a lot of thinking to do, haven't we? And a lot of reimagining to do, but that's when I guess we're at our best. So I'm not frightened yet.
How has it affected the work you make so far? Because Romantic Anonymous was about to tour to America.
Yeah, so we'd opened Romantics Anonymous in Bristol and it was a huge success. And we'd packed it all into a shipping container. And the shipping container was in America when LA cancelled. We were going to play in Beverly Hills. And at that point, we felt unlucky. We thought that they were overreacting. It's amazing how, you know, it took me a long time to catch up with the story. So we felt that that company were very hard done by. And in fact, we called a company meeting to talk to them and look after them. And I can remember it was on that day I came on the train to London and I suddenly thought, this is serious. We're not unlucky. There's something coming. And I can remember thinking this will be the last time that we have a meeting like this, and it was. So yes, that show didn't happen. Mallory Towers was about to, we were at the final rehearsal run that obviously was cancelled. It was going to open in Keswick. So lots of people's lives are being affected. There was a funny little footnote to the Romantics Anonymous, though, is that the set was floating outside LA at some point and we didn't know how to get it back, but it did actually arrive back in England yesterday.
Oh, really?
So Romantics Anonymous, it's taken all this time, has finally come home to be stored. So we'll see. I'm not ready to let go of these shows. You know, I truly hope and believe that when the time is right, we're going to need all this beautiful work in some shape or form. So I haven't let them go yet. But the good news... Oh, sorry, what was that?
No, I was just going to say, hopefully you will need to just ship it straight back out to America when this comes.
Yeah, across the... Or I don't know, do a pop-up theatre somewhere, I don't know. But at least we've got it all back together and we'll be ready. I think that's the word I think about at the moment, is we just have to be ready. But one of the really good bits of news from Wise Children's point of view and York Theatre Royal is we're still in the pre-planning of Wuthering Heights. The National is being really committed. Wise Children's really committed. So the design process is coming along beautifully, and the writing and the casting. And nobody can second guess what's going to happen. And I'm not deaf and blind to the situation, but I do believe that when we're ready to open, that show's going to be fantastic. And you're going to be co-producers again, which is vitally important to me because it's Yorkshire story. So it really, really needs to have its roots firmly rooted with you. So I've got everything crossed. And I'm not feeling desperate at the moment.
No, it's really important that it's a really funny time, I think, for artists because you want to keep creating and be use this time, but it's a lot to keep on top of with like all the feelings. So yeah, I think being calm and not desperate is a really, hopefully the art will just flourish from that.
Yeah, and I think we've learned, I love you saying that, yeah, all the feelings, which is true, you know, we don't just have jobs, do we? We really love what we do and we love the people we do it with. So there's a lot of feelings. But I think what we learned from the first weeks of this situation was to calm down because we kept trying to get ahead of the story and you can't. You just can't. So you have to sit back a little bit and be a little bit, I'm going to use that dreadful word, mindful. You know, you need to just say, okay, we're going to just hold back and hold our nerve, keep being kind, keep doing things like this and making sure that everybody feels that the community is still there, but yeah, see what happens. Be ready.
So when you start a piece of work, whether it be Wise Children, Mallory Towers, kind of what's your spark? Is it that initial story that already exists and then kind of bringing it to life?
Yeah, I've never written anything original, but I adapt and I have always adapted. Whether it's the Back Eye or Folk Stories, The Red Shoes, or Wise Children, a big fat novel by Angela Carter. I call it, you called it a spark, I call it an itch. I always think I sort of, something starts sort of nagging away at me and I think, I wonder why I'm thinking about that or why is my eye hovering over that book on my bookshelf? And I think if I'm clever, I try and listen out to what it is that's nagging away at me because there'll be a clue in there. It will be because it's the right time for me to tell that story, or there's something that's personal to me at that moment that I understand. And I always think that if you're too clever, you're going to end up with a clever idea which is somehow not right. So I try not to be too intellectual when I'm thinking about work. I try to be emotional because it will be that emotional itch that will absolutely power me through. So one of the questions I always ask is, why do I want to tell this story? And if I can answer it, I'm onto a really good thing. And if I know how it ends, which I'd say 9 times out of 10 I do, I know I'm onto a really good thing because I kind of know why I'm telling the story and what I want to say with it. So if you've got the why and the end, you think, right, I can run with this.
You can fill the rest in as you go along, kind of.
Yeah. So Wuthering Heights is an interesting one to talk about because I think... I've always loved the book and my family used to come to Yorkshire on walking holidays. So I've always been romantic about Wuthering Heights and Thrushcross Grange and all of those landmarks that we used to visit as children. but I think I thought it was romantic, and it was all part of the refugee crisis, certainly when the jungle was happening in Calais, that I suddenly thought, gosh, I want to return to that and think about Heathcliff. And of course, returning to the book, he was found at Liverpool docks. He spoke in a different language. He's constantly described as black hair, dark skin. And at one point he's described as Alaska. So my current theory is that he was Indian, of Indian descent, coming into the docks. And I just thought it's not a romance. It's a revenge tragedy about what happens if you don't welcome people in need and if you don't look after. And I was certainly thinking about the refugee children. If we don't look after them and give them home and give them shelter, we're breeding trouble for the future. So that was why I really wanted to tell this story now. And I knew what I wanted the end to be, which was all about hope and about how you could give birth to love in a story that actually has very scant love in it. So the romance bursts through, but it's very hard fought. But even talking about it makes me want to smile, because I think by the time the hope bursts out of Wuthering Heights, you're so ready for it. I feel like we're going to all want to stand and cheer at the end.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. It's so exciting. And that's...
Me neither.
That'll be at the Littleton at the National.
Yes.
Obviously, we don't know when, but hopefully very, very soon. The first show that you did with Wise Children, the company, was Wise Children. Can you talk us through the itch behind Wise Children?
Oh, easy and lovely. So I'd always love the novel. It's a big, rambling family saga, which I love. I love the sort of domestic, messy side of life and love. But it's really a love letter to theatre. It's so funny. It's about the illegitimate children of the most famous Shakespearean of his generation. So let's imagine that it's Laurence Olivier. If he had two illegitimate daughters who were showgirls. And it was really about, it's about loving everything that goes into theatre. The glamour and the sort of the headiness of the audience, but also the hard graft. She talks so wonderfully about how hard dancers work and how their feet ache and their bodies ache, but also in such a joyful way. The one of the many wonderful phrases that is shot through is, what a joy it is to dance and sing. So I've always loved the book, because it's what I feel is that what a privilege it is to live and work in theatre. I, in fact, started adapting it many years ago and nobody wanted it. It never got picked up by anybody. I never had the money, you know, different things happened. I went to Shakespeare's Globe and I started thinking when I was at the Globe, oh, this could be brilliant because there's Shakespeare is all the way through it. I think she mentions 37 of the 38 plays within the book. But of course, as we know, the Shakespeare's Globe all went wrong and I left after 2 years. And at that moment, I knew that actually it was perfect that this show hadn't happened before. It was ripe and ready and absolutely about loving theatre, but feeling like you're on the wrong side of the tracks, which is what I felt at that point. I felt like I was always an outsider, always on the left-hand side. And you know what? I'm happy there. It's suddenly where I thought, this is actually not a problem. It's my gift and it's the thing I want to celebrate. So that's why I made Wise Children. And it was the best tonic ever. I named my company after the book because it's what I want to be. I want to be smart, but I want to be silly and I don't want to lose my innocence, because I think as a theatre maker, you need to keep your hope and keep your twinkle and your sense of surprise. But I'm too old to be stupid, so I'm going to be wise and I'm going to do it really well and be as clever and sassy as I can.
I really like that. When I watched it back, I was kind of thinking there's so many different elements to Wise Children, like anything from your lighting and sound all the way through to puppetry and projection. How do you kind of convey your vision to such a big team without kind of losing grasp of it?
Oh, what a great question. I think it's two things. One is preparation, which is, and laying the foundations. I always think, I love the collective imagination. I talk about it a lot, but the shows that you see on stage are not born solely from my mind, because that would be a much smaller experience. And I know what I'm imagining. The thrill of theatre is when my imagination starts fizzing with the imagination of others. So part of my job is to talk to my team about the story and about the feel of it and why, the why of it. Why do we want to tell this? And to ask the right questions and to steer very gently, not being prescriptive, but to say, this is what I want this to feel like. This is why I want this feeling here. And then you need to trust your team, which is the second thing, which is what I talked about earlier, loyalty. My team I've been working with for many years. They're my best friends as well as the most fantastic professionals. So if I lay the foundations and ask the right questions and then give people space, then they surprise me. And it's that surprise that is when shows really take off and that I see a show that I never imagined. And if you add into that the humanity that the actors bring as well, you get this big ball of humanity that is really diverse and is really speaking to lots of people. So you almost get the universal, but I'm not controlling it. I'm enabling and guiding and then giving people the trust and the space to be their brilliant selves.
Am I right in thinking that you work a lot with dancers rather than actors?
Yeah, I suppose I do. I love working with dancers because they're so physical. They're you know, I'm fond of words, but I don't think it's the only way to tell a story. And if I had to choose, I'd probably go for movement above words. If I was forced, if I was at gunpoint, I'd probably say music first, movement second, words third. And I always think only use words when nothing else will tell the story to keep it keep everything fresh and emotional and connected. And dancers are just brilliant. You know, they've got a fantastic work ethic. They work really hard and really expressive in the theatre form. You know, I've never worked in film and TV and I don't really want to particularly because a close-up is a very different thing. You know, you're looking into the eyes, but theatre, people are sat a long way away if they're at the back and you want the body to tell the story. And I love dancers for that. And a lot of them are fantastic actors waiting to burst out. So, yeah, I've got a lot of ex-dancers, brilliant actors that I work with.
You've got a lot of musicians as cast members as well, I suppose, especially like in Wise Children.
Yeah, music. I cannot imagine a world without music or theatre without music. I think it's the emotional glue that holds a lot of my work together. And the musicians are in the room from day one and we all behave as one team. So as the actors are discovering the characters, the musicians are discovering the themes and we're all playing with how that soundtrack goes. So it's more like film in that way, that we're laying a soundtrack under the whole piece, using themes, surprising ourselves. So it might be in week four of rehearsals, you suddenly say, what happens if you put the love theme under the miscarriage moment, and suddenly you get quite a wonderful fizzy emotional response. And of course that's what music does, is it's an international language, is that music speaks straight to the heart, straight to the senses. And I can't, it does such a big job for me. There can be whole scenes where there's no words, but the music and the actors can, with their bodies, can convey such meaning that it's amazing. And the other thing that's worth saying about Wise Children is, whilst all the music is notated and all the eventually and all the musicians are highly skilled, almost all of it is learnt by ear. So you won't see music in the band that they're playing. They're playing like a band would play and like an actor would learn its lines. So it's really cohesive. It's one team telling a story with all the skills.
How was that choice made? Was that just something that was organic and you didn't need the sheet music?
Yeah, it's the musicians that I choose to work with and continue to work with. And from my background with Knee High is that's a lot of the early musicians I worked with weren't classically trained. Stu Barker, who I've worked with for many years, he was a punk rocker, you know, a sort of self-taught punk rocker. And then, you know, I think it's a bit like my attitude to text, is that the technicals can come later. Start with the emotional and then work out what you've done. But if you start too intellectual, it's almost impossible to get off the blocks. So I think it's quite good to keep working instinctively with lots of trust, lots of belief, lots of bravery, and then you can notate it later. You can always change a line to make it work. Whereas if you start off saying the line is perfect, how can I understand it? That isn't me. I know it's other people, but it's not me. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't be able to get through a play if I had to break it down like that.
I think we've been all thinking a lot about the liveness of theatre and obviously missing it. And there's been the NT Live broadcasts and Wise Children is on the iPlayer. Can you talk us through a little bit about your feelings on that and when you knew that Wise Children was going to be filmed and whether that impacted the play at all?
Yeah, I mean, I do have strong feelings, which is I'm on the planet to do live theatre to a live audience. And that's, it's what I call the temporary community, that temporary community. And the fact that it only happens that night is the thing that makes my heart sing. So I think I felt, over the years, I felt ambivalent about the live streaming. I have a worry that it takes ticket sales away from theatre. If you can watch opera for £9 in the cinema, why would you spend £15 to go to your local theatre? But I think it's proven itself to be an addition to the cultural landscape. And certainly for like my mum and dad have really enjoyed it, sort of being connected to culture as they've got older. So I've certainly felt very... I don't see it as a threat. I see it as another way of enjoying arts and culture. But my personal experience of filming Wise Children for the BBC, we changed nothing in the show apart from we had to stop some of the swearing, which now I wish we didn't. And it was in order to get under 15 rating. So we had to not repeat our swear words. And of course, Angela Carter is a filthy writer. And I found it quite hard to clean up the language without cleaning up the spirit of it. But we did. And then annoyingly, we didn't get the credit we needed anyway. So we could have kept all the swearing in because we didn't get the certificate that we wanted. So that was the only changes we made to the show, was a tiny tweak on the swearing. But I was really impressed by the team and Bridget, the director, who was so engaged with the work. And it was such a detailed archive of the show is that I could not be happier with it. I mean, my director's eye, I look at it now and I think if I was ever to direct a film, I would direct slower. Theatre moves at a very fast pace because you can't do a close-up. So you're constantly having to tell the audience where to look and to spark up like little landmines saying, look here, this is what's happening. And actually in film, you can cool the pace down and you can linger with a character. So that was my critical eye on it, is I thought for film I'd just slow the experience down a little bit. But I think the storytelling is brilliant. I've got enormous respect for that team and what they did. And I could not be prouder now or more thankful that we've got this amazing archive of a show that more and more people can enjoy in your theatre.
How did that conversation come about having it filmed?
We applied to an initiative called The Space, which looks at projects that can be filmed for the BBC, and we won the bid. So that was how we did that and worked with the Space team and the BBC to deliver that. It was certainly nothing that we, certainly as a startup company, could have done without that financial and structural help.
Do you think any more Wise Children shows will be sort of get the filming treatment as well?
I really hope so. But we would need to do more bids like that. It's certainly not within our financial ability to do that alone. But it's thrilling. It's interesting in this period of reflection as well, because I'm doing, like you, you know, sort of thinking about things and making some content. And my personal archive is almost non-existent. You know, in Knee-High, it was pre-digital. We didn't keep anything. I didn't keep a diary. I don't even know what I did in what year. And actually, it suddenly feels like it would be really good to start saying, where was I? What happened? How much material can I pull into this personal archive? So yeah, any chance of filming, I would grab now. And as I say, with now I've seen the process and the care and the rigor, storytelling rigor that goes into it, I'd be thrilled to do that again.
Your next project was Mallory Towers. What was the itch behind that one?
Well, that was an unusual one in that it was a producer that sent me the books through. And as a general rule, if anybody suggests a project to me, I say no, because I always think most projects should come from me. But this producer is a dear friend of mine, David Pugh. I've worked with him many times, and he sent me through a lovely package of wrapped in brown paper and red ribbon, and it was a set of Mallory Towers books. Now, I'd never read them. I was a Famous Five girl and Secret Seven. But they were beautiful old books, and the first one said First Term at Mallory Towers, and it had a picture of a girl in a bathing costume standing on a Cornish cliff about to dive into an open-air pool. And, of course, so much of my heart is in Cornwall. So much of my heart is with women and girls. And they're sort of cracking reads. And I just thought, oh, damn it, this is such a good idea to do a contemporary reworking of girls. And fiction for young people is close to my heart as well. And I just thought this is perfect. And I read them and the characters are so brilliant. Whatever you think of Enid Blyton, she writes a plot like nobody and characters like nobody else. I felt like I could recognise every girl at Mallory Towers with a girl that I went to school with in my inner city Nottingham Comprehensive. She's got such an eye for what it was like. And I just thought this would be fantastic to do with fantastic casting, with an eye to diversity and modernity, to take these rip-roaring adventures but really give them heart and soul and a chance to sort of cast its net into the future. And I think we did a really good job. I'm nostalgic about that time as well. My mum would have been at school at that time. It was post-war, when, you know, my granddad fought in the war, and my mum and dad were both educated as working class kids in that landscape, and the National Health Service was built in that landscape. I feel that it was a time of great hope where people were really trying to be the best of themselves. And I felt that I really wanted to think about that, because of course I made it in the middle of Brexit, and I felt that we weren't being the best of ourselves. And, you know, how the story has changed. I feel that this dreadful virus that's happened to us has actually changed the story again. And we are re-examining who we are and what our priorities are. So I think all sorts of good things will happen. But that's why I wanted to do Mallory Towers, a sort of nostalgic cry of hope and female empowerment. And, you know, Enid Blyton says it better than me, which is to be good, strong women that the world can lean on.
So hope seems to run a lot through your work.
Yeah, I can't help it. I don't think I could get out of bed in the morning if I wasn't making work and feeling hopeful, because, you know, life's tough at times, isn't it? And I think if you think about, you have to think of ways out and ways to survive, and that's creative. And I feel that as a person as well. You know, we all know all sorts of hardships, and you have to think, well, I'm going to survive. So the question is not whether I survive, but how I survive. And that's a good question. And yeah, I am naturally hopeful. So, you know, I always think if people give up their time to come out to the theatre, imagine that these days. But, you know, their money and their time, then it's my job to give them a good night out. I want them to laugh. I want them to cry. And I want them to feel better as they step out onto the street than they did when they walked in. And I think that's a simple ambition that I stand by.
Cool. Well, me and Jesse have come up with some quick fire sort of isolation questions, if that's all right. So we'll try these. So what have you been watching to sort of keep you entertained?
Succession.
Ooh.
It's brilliant. It's just agonisingly tense and absolutely brilliant and really darkly funny. And Taskmaster, everybody in our household loves it. So that's my Succession and Taskmaster.
What series of Taskmaster are you watching? Who's on it?
I'm proud to say I've watched them all, but the best is Series 7. James Acaster, Rod Gilbert.
Yeah.
Jessica Knappett. Kerry Godleyman. Phil Wang.
What have you realised that you can't live without at home now?
Almonds. And peanuts. I've gone nut crazy. Almonds and peanuts. Long baths.
Oh yeah.
Country walks. I'm doing all right.
And what's inspiring you at the moment?
Oh, the people around me. I'm actually feeling quite calm. My mum and dad, my sister, and my lovely family, my step kids, and my fella. Yeah, everybody's inspiring me.
That's really sweet. And then we've got a classic. We've been doing, as it's an interval episode, we've been asking people, what is their go-to drink during the interval?
Oh, gin and tonic. Gin and tonic, without a doubt, every time. I have a broad taste in gin. In fact, I had a gin advent calendar this year, so I had 24 different bottles to get through. But I like a slow one, the slow gin.
We got a gin advent calendar after it went on sale, so we got 24 gins for something like £10. Look out for those after Christmas. What's your interval ice cream?
Oh, simple vanilla.
Nice.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with ice cream. And never strawberry, never, ever. Just vanilla.
Controversial opinions there. Whew.
So the White School for Wise Children was conceived at the absolute start. Absolutely the heart of Wise Children. And the idea was, I started the company when I was 50, right in the middle of my sort of life and my career. And I thought it has to be more than just a theatre company. And the thing I wanted to do was to provide high-level training to talented young people of all backgrounds. So the big idea is that for every place that's paid for, we give a place away to targeted talented people who wouldn't normally have access to the arts and training, because as we know, it can be astronomical to train, and that diminishes the people that are able to work in our industry. So we're building it now. I've got a fantastic producer, Helen Comerford, who's running the school and making plans for how we can really make a difference in the years to come to who we see on our stage and the voices that we hear.
And what kind of training does that involve for the children that are involved?
It's not children, it's all over 18s.
Over 18, sorry.
So in fact, I was saying young people, young artists, but it could be, we have people of my age and older coming as well. So we're really looking at how we can teach and break down the way that I and my team make theatre, which is very visual, very much through storytelling techniques, through music. So we've run courses for musicians who want to make theatre work, and devising. We call it the toolkit. So you're constantly looking at how design, writing, movement and song can all come together to tell a story. So looking at really creative people.
What's the structure of it? Are there regular classes?
No, so we're still experimenting at the moment because we're only 2 years old as a company. So the first 4 years was trying out different models. So we've done, we did a 3-week school, which was the most intense one that we've done. We did one school that went over weekends because we thought over several weekends, we thought that it might help people continue to work. Because again, we're looking at how you can look at the economic barriers to training. We just did one online. We did a composition for theatre online because of the lockdown. So we're looking at various, and we do taster sessions when we go on tour so that we're meeting people in the regions who then we then suggest that they might come onto the longer courses. So we're experimenting with different models and seeing and asking our students which models work for them in their complex lives and how best to give them the training that they want. So what we're hoping is in another year or so, we'll have worked out the structure of the school and be able to present it more formally. But we're experimenting with lots of ideas at the moment.
You're offering a little bit of entertainment and relief from the lockdown through your Wise Children Lockdown Tea and Biscuits, which is 4 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays.
That's right. Oh, don't ask me questions that I can't answer. Go to the Google Wise Children Digital, I guess, or go to the website, I hope. Or even better, sign up for our mailing list and then you'll get all the reminders and look out for us online. My digital officer will be killing me at this moment when he hears that I haven't got all of that at my fingertips. But yeah, the tea and biscuits was a really nice way of keeping all the people that matter to me close. So I'm interviewing them. We're having a cup of tea together, reminiscing, talking about the way we make work. And yeah, it's been really enjoyable. Really, that's what's been making me think we need to be archiving a bit better because so many memories that we all need to hold on to.
So you've got a Wise Children Club where people can buy a membership of. What would their membership get them?
Oh, well, your membership gets you the newsletters. There's a special members area on the website. We sometimes set the club tasks, but the big idea really is that we become a community. So if you're interested in us, join. It's a small amount of money. That's not really what it's about. It's about knowing you, knowing who our fans are, who our friends are, so that they can be part of the story. You can tell us what we're doing right, tell us what we're doing wrong. And, you know, ultimately, that's what it's all about, is building our communities and our friendship. So, yeah, come and be our partner, join the club. It's really good fun. And we're always trying to think of different ways to keep the Wise Children story out there and keep the Wise Children story changing, because that's the only thing you can be certain of in life, change.
Lovely. So watch Wise Children and iPlayer, listen to the Lockdown Team Biscuits, and join the Wise Children Club.
Yeah, and listen to our podcasts. We've got 3 series of podcasts that have gone out, which are all on the website and on the digital site. So there's quite a lot of Wise Children stuff you can get involved with. Do it.
Well, thank you so much, Emma, for talking to us at this crazy, crazy time. We really appreciate it. And it's been fascinating hearing about the way you work.
Thank you very much, both. It was really enjoyable.
Thank you so much. We hope you continue to have a calm and lovely lockdown, as lovely as it can be.
Oh, well, thank you, and you.
Thank you.
See you on the other side, as
see
I keep saying.
See you on the other side.
Thank bye. You.
Bye. 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 Bye.
Thank you so much, Emma, for coming on our podcast and spreading some joy.
It was absolutely lovely. Like, just hearing how you create a work was absolutely fascinating.
So, as we mentioned at the end of the episode, there's some tasks that you can get on with if you're looking for things to do. Listening to the Wise Children podcast and their Lockdown Tea and Biscuits series.
And then you can also catch Wise Children recorded at York Theatre Royal on BBC iPlayer at the moment, so would fully recommend you do that.
And another York Theatre Royal thing that you can do is they are we're live streaming Everything Is Possible, which was the amazing production from 2017. That's going to be streamed on which is the amazing production about the suffragettes that was in summer 2017, and that's going to be available on YouTube between the 6th of May and 31st of May, so definitely catch that.
And that's on YouTube, so yeah, would 100% recommend. But as always, stay safe out there in isolation. It's a crazy time at the moment, but if you can, support your local theatre or support the arts in any way possible.
Stay safe. Take care.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.